Hi, welcome to Rockle and Russell's YouTube review. Each week we'll be setting each other challenges on YouTube and finding videos for hopefully your entertainment. Hope you enjoy this current episode.
How are you, mate? All right?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I've got like a big cyst spot thing under my armpit.
Something to edit out straight away. Do you know how you've done it? You're right.
Yeah, they're ingrown hair things, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what starts it, I think. But then once it starts, it just fucking really gets really inflamed and it's hard to look after.
Yeah, it's not as if you can walk around like that, is it?
No.
But yeah.
Taxis keep stopping.
All right, I won't edit it out. How's your week been, mate? You've been up to much?
Yeah, good. I messaged you, didn't I? I had a really enjoyed arm thing is what led me to being up in the middle of the night on Saturday just gone, which is what allowed me to binge my way back into Dave.
Oh, yeah, yeah. How did you find it?
Oh, yeah. You were right. Yeah, it was good. It was because I'd said to you a while ago, it was quite hard going the first few episodes
of
the new series. Because the first one ended in the way that it did. Quite positively, that when the new one started and he was just like screwing himself up again, and I was like,
I don't know if there's like a worse person on telly that you want to do well. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like he's almost about. He's such an arsehole to all his mates, all his girlfriends, and all like every. But it's like almost like a new way of looking at sitcoms. Like he has this whole episode where he's trying to chat up Doja Cat. No idea who.
Yeah,
and it's like all done via text message, isn't it? Like pretty much 80% of the episode. I think it's brilliant. And I've watched that last bit of the second series upwards of 20 times. Love it.
Yeah. Yeah. I probably watched it. I probably then rewound it and watched it two or three times and then watched it probably three or four times the following day as well, just on iPlayer and YouTube. I really liked it, especially because of the reason I said to you that I was starting to get a little bit worried about Gator.
Yeah.
I just thought something was gonna, something bad was gonna happen to him, and I was like, I really like, So it was just a perfect little sort of wrap up.
There's some really good episodes in there, isn't there? When they do the kids' bar mitzvah, that's good.
Yeah.
So, and then Gator saves the day, kind of thing. And
I like the flotation tank. I love a hallucinogenic trip on the TV.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. There's a few like. Do you remember when Homer eats the chili and then goes on the weird. Yeah,
that's in the Simpsons movie, isn't it? Oh no, that's the
I think it was
in the movie. He goes on another hallucinogenic trip, doesn't he, through like Native America? The Chili's one with the fox.
Yes, that's the one.
I'll show you Transcendence or something, isn't it? Kicks a turtle.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just something about him I just like, and that was good as well when he had the kind of meeting with himself. But it was really good. And then we started watching Afterlife as well.
Right.
Off the back of
I don't think it's as I think it's more like a heartfelt kind of thing more than it is funny. It's only really Ratty and the Nonce that got me proper laughing. But just because they're two names, when they start fucking about like doing Instagram videos or whatever, TikTok videos or whatever, I think that's like they're perfect for 45-50 year old prick who wants to still be famous. If you like Dave, you should try Atlanta next. That's on Disney Plus.
Yeah.
Have you got Disney Plus?
Yeah. Is it half hours? That's the key, I think.
Yeah, the half hour episodes. Have you seen Encanto?
Twice. Well, it's been on twice. I think I watched it one of those times and then background and then talking about watching it again this weekend.
Yeah, did you like it? I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
It's the best one I've seen for quite a while from Disney.
Yeah. I've not seen, I don't know if it's a Disney one or not, but I've still not seen Coco, which I've heard is good.
I don't know if because Lin-Manuel Miranda must have a contract. So they're like, next one we'll have to do somewhere Latin American. If he's going to be doing the lyrics. We've done Moana, Coco, and now I don't know if you think Coco, but Encanto. And you can kind of hear his like lyrics and flow through each song.
Yeah,
I think it's excellent. Really, really good. You don't watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, but Rosa Diaz is the main girl in it, which I was really confused by as well, because she's obviously 15. She looks like Roberta Firmino.
It's what? Okay, so because Brooklyn Nine-Nine And is Chelsea Peretti in that?
Yes.
Yeah, because she looks like Bradley Cooper. We were watching, she was on like the big fat quiz of the year or something a couple of years ago.
Oh, really?
A few years ago. Okay. Chelsea Peretti, I think, or something like that, one of those programs.
Yeah. She's married to Keenan or Peel. Keel Peel.
Oh, is she?
The one who presented Get Out of, directed Get Out. The fatter one.
Yeah. But she was, we were watching it. And, oh, I was saying to Emma all night, I was like, she just really reminds me of someone, like that Chelsea Peretti. And I was, I couldn't place who it was. Mm. So I'm going to go on Google and say, like, who does Chelsea Peretti look like? Or Chelsea? And the first one that come up was Bradley Cooper. And I was like, that's it. That's who he reminded me of. And then I scrolled down, and the first kind of link I found to a Chelsea Peretti lookalike comic was a tweet by someone. So I clicked on it, and the bloke who'd tweeted it said, Chelsea Peretti looks like Bradley Cooper, I'd still fuck her.
Thanks. You've been very strong on Twitter this week, Mark. That Chris Waddle thing, I'm still laughing at that. That's absolutely brilliant.
Well, that was nothing to do with me.
You just screenshot it?
Yeah, I stayed out of the conversation. I didn't need to after whoever it was that said that thing.
Yeah. Oh, should we just read it? Get it done?
Yeah.
It's absolutely brilliant. So Chris Waddle is just basically sent out a tweet saying that he likes Carling, wasn't it? That's his favourite lager.
What's everyone's favourite beer?
Yeah. And then a bloke running Brewmaster replied, out of all the beers in the world, you like Carling? Want me to send you a bottle of the IPA I'm busy fermenting? It's a copy of a Brewdog recipe called Never Mind the Anabolics with a couple of twists. I pitched a different yeast and added black wheat malt instead of white. And then Ben Doon replied,
why don't you ferment yourself some mates while you're at it?
Fucking brilliant. It's good for stuff like that. I do like a Twitter. I like the other day I had a little run of, like, you know, when you go through it and you start liking tweets. And I think I did 5 in a row and I thought, why are these even on my timeline? And Miller had liked all 5 as well. Like, that's why they're on there. What was the one today? Oh, there was a really good quote, actually. I'm not a big fan of, you know, when people put fucking, like, quotes that are on people's kitchen walls or in frames and stuff. And it was like, I think it was it's a Turkish saying or something. It's not even that good. I don't know why. When a clown enters a palace, the clown does not become a king. The palace becomes a circus. I thought that was really good. And then... people like putting loads of Boris Johnson shit on there, and I was like, I've stopped caring. Yeah, I can't.
Yeah, so a lot of the time, I will just kind of.
Yeah.
I think because of how big Twitter is, I was saying to Emma the other day, you have to be pretty good if you do a joke or a response that someone else hasn't done. It doesn't mean it's not funny, just that the amount of the sheer volume of people, like more than one person, is going to have had the same idea. So a lot of the time, you can just scroll down until you see the thing that you were going to say.
Yeah.
enjoy it, but without being the one that's been mean, without being mean to someone.
Yeah, good week. I went back to Hertfordshire this week, last Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah.
We went to a place, Electric Shuffle, in South London. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
Is it like shuffleboard?
Yeah, shuffleboard, and it just tells you up on the screen. I think out of the things we've done in London, like Flight Club is definitely the best. But shuffleboard, just, you know, when you throw one, and I think, oh, I found another thing I'm shit at.
It's like Sarsens.
Yeah, basically playing Sarsens, but you don't have 300 goes and 20 pints of Carling. We had like a board game night, and then I saw play golf on Sunday morning with Dave and Greg and my mate. Well, Sean, you met Sean, who came on the pod for the 90s. That's good. Greg and Dave obviously didn't turn up. But had a wonderful time with Sean. I shot an 85. Don't know if that means anything to you, but it's very good
for me. Hold on. So 85 is the score you're left with once you've taken your handicap off. Is that how it works?
If I took my handicap off, I would have shot a 85 minus 21.
Oh, right.
So 64, which is 8 under. So I got like 44 points. And my handicap's not right because I'm playing a lot better. Because of the weather, I can't put in scorecards because the whole course isn't open at my golf course. So I can't, like, my handicap's not going to come down. So I'm just going to wait till there's a big pot and enter it, try and have a good round and win.
Won't that kind of put you on the Sid Patel levels of disgrace and cheating?
Well, the thing is, it's not really cheating because I can't do it. Like, every time I play in a tournament, you have to upload your like score online. So there's no way of me like cheating. And then they work your handicap out from that. But if I play on my own, I'm not going to stick in a handicap because a lot of the time I'll have a shot and it goes badly and just put another ball down. So it's only when I play in tournaments, and I only played in like 6 or 7 tournaments last year. So my handicap is quite bad, but then, you know, it's all boring. And, but yeah, I had a good round. And they do a really good thing at Pangzanger where when you play the 18th, half an hour later in the bar, they show you what was happening on the 18th hole. So you go in and you can watch yourself play on and putt, but I had to run off. So Sean filmed my chip on, which I was well impressed with. So thank you, Sean. Had a great day. And then, yeah, rushing back. So I missed all football this weekend. But yeah, happy to kind of see my parents and celebrate Christmas, which is slightly weird.
How's your New Year challenge going?
I'm down. Obviously, we're through going to London last week. I did have a rack of ribs. I've come all this way. But I don't know. Did you see what I did today?
No, I don't think so.
All right. I cycled. I started cycling thinking I wouldn't mind seeing some cool stuff in the Forest of Dean. But then I thought I'd like to cycle across the Severn Bridge.
Yeah.
And both ways seem like it's uphill. It's like knackering. And then I got over the other side. I thought I'll cycle along the river a bit, but I couldn't get to it. So I had to go another route and I got lost. And then when I got home, I'd done 48 kilometers on the bike. Wow. Today. So I'm in absolute fucking agony. And Zoe was like, oh, can you have tea ready for me when I get home? I'm like, no. Whatever we eat tonight will be ordered. But yeah, it's going really well.
Or what is it?
Well, we ended up putting fucking Kievs in the oven. Sorry, I'll have to edit that out. I had a lovely cooked meal for my wife of Kievs and peas. I'm down a stone from January 1st, and then I've got another stone to go. But obviously, like, I had a blip this weekend. I think the key is starting really heavy if you want to lose 2 stones. And everyone tells you the best way to do it.
Yeah, but then I'm a big believer in the whole kind of everybody's built differently. Like, what works for one doesn't work for someone else. I think I mean, Emma loves those programs on the TV, the weight loss programs and stuff, but they all tell you what to do. And then they all ultimately finish by saying, but, you know, everyone's different. And I need to, I've kind of focused quite hard trying to get the sort of post-Christmas, you know, get back to where I was before Christmas. And then see if I can go from there and keep improving. So I've just made minor things at the moment, like in the build up to Christmas. And then during Christmas, I was kind of having beers and snacks and stuff on like a Friday night.
Yeah.
And a Saturday night and a Sunday night. And before you know it, you've got kind of approaching half the week.
Yeah.
So I've cut out Fridays and cut down Sundays. I've not completely stopped having a couple of cans of beer on a Sunday night, but that's what I'm going to do next and just have it, just try and get back to just having like,
yeah,
one day where I have shit.
But I look like I went to Tesco with work to do some shopping, and I thought I'd get myself some lunch. I thought, I don't know what I'm going to get. I'll probably just get like some protein. So I'll just get some like chicken pieces or something. You know, they do quite nice deli chicken pieces and stuff. And it was like $2.99.
I know. I
thought, fucking hell. And like, if I wanted some bananas with that, that's an extra another like £1.50 or something. But then you go around the corner, 9 turkey dinosaurs, £1.80. You think?
Yeah.
No wonder everyone's so fucking fat. You know, it's just so easily done. It's just so expensive to be like healthy. It's crap.
Yeah. When we go shopping and sort of we have our shopping delivered a lot of the time now, but when you go in, generally the fruit and veg aisles are first, aren't they?
Mm.
When you go into the shops and when you like putting stuff in the trolley and you're like clocking how much you spend, by the time we leave the fruit and veg aisle, like, £2 for a little kind of pack of grapes, £2 for a little pack of blueberries, £2 for a little pack of raspberries. Just thinking, Jesus, like, and it's gone in 2 days.
Yeah. And like, Zoe's picked up like chia seeds and flaxseed and walnuts. And I think the fucking price of nuts, it's mental. I'm sure, like, I used to buy them in a pub, they weren't that expensive.
But, and you got to see the ladies' tits as they
get old Big D. But like, it's so easy, isn't it? You just burn more calories than you put in.
Yeah. Have you not been tempted to kind of get into a bit of a karate?
No. Good. So, good segue. Yes, I have been very, very tempted. I did a PBM course, positive behaviour management. So it's basically self-defence. And the guy who I was, like, it was 10 women and me and one guy. So when they said, can you pair up? Pair up, right? Fucking hell. So you got a full apron, front and back, gloves, mask, screen, and now you're going to learn how to defend yourself kind of thing against an attack from an autistic man. As we lined up, I gave him a little bow and went, strike first, no mercy. And he goes, oh, do you like Cobra Kai? And I went, we're friends now. Yeah, so did you mention it last week? Well, I'm up to date. I've smashed 4 seasons in that time. It's so good, the half-hour episodes, isn't it?
I think in the early ones were even less than that. Yeah, I finished it because I was up to date, so I was watching series 4 as it kind of came out, and I think I finished it, you know, early part of this week, I think.
Yeah.
Or late last week.
When you put on, is it Facebook the other day, about that'll do? Like when directors say, what was that with regards to with Cobra Kai?
Just like, obviously, some of the actual acting in it.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they don't sort of muck around too much with getting lines perfect and doing second takes, because it is just, it's just some of it is awful, isn't it?
Yeah. I like Johnny Lawrence. I think Johnny Lawrence is the best thing about it. And his kind of naivety of like modern technologies and things, and anything about like not in the 80s, they've done that really well. But like, if either someone from Cobra Kai or Miyagi-Do or Eagle Fang, whatever it is now, are fighting someone who's not in there, they're fucking amazing. The other person, they're doing like backflips and like tornado kicks and all sorts, and then Eli Muscovitz is just doing a front punch and winning. I really, really like Cobra Kai, and I will watch the next season. But then you look at like Kreese and the new geezer, I just think, what's the fucking point? Why are you still bothering? Like, you're a multi-millionaire living on the beach, and why are you coming back to work in a car park in fucking in San Fran?
Yeah, Terry Silver. I mean, really, now that, do we have to say spoiler alert?
Yeah, go for it.
I don't know if my dad watches Cobra Kai. the bloke who appeared at the end, who's now going to be helping LaRusso get back at him. What, now he's kind of resurfaced again. There's not many people left for them to bring back.
Yeah.
And the next one has got to be the guy that I referred to last week, is that Mike Barnes from Karate Kid 3. Mike Barnes was LaRusso's opponent in Karate Kid 3, who that Terry Silver was, you know, the sort of mentor of, and he's the only like notable person now, I think, that they could bring back.
Miyagi.
Other than wheeling out Mr. Miyagi in a kind of weekend at Bernie's.
You know how they brought like Tupac back on stage, like hologram. Yeah. Just get a Miyagi. Like, I really like it. It's so nostalgic, isn't it? Like, it's great. Even though I'm not a big fan of the 80s, I'm not quite particularly au fait with Karate Kid 2 and 3, but yeah. Yeah, Cobra Kai, big thumbs up. I'll watch the next series quite easily. Yeah, like I was saying to you about the whole Harry Potter parody of it.
Yeah.
Harry Potter doesn't know, like, you know, when they go, I know you watch Harry Potter, so I'll have to explain it to like everyone, like they've never seen Harry Potter. They go to like the Quidditch World Cup, and then they're walking on this field and they go, right, we're going to have to use a portkey. And instantly, you know, Harry Potter is going to ask what a portkey is, like, because he has no idea about the wizarding world. Yet, about 3 films later, it hangs on his fucking shoulders, and everything he does, he's got to, no, I can't ask you to help me. And I'm just, oh, shut up, you fucking little tit. Of course, Ron and Hermione are going to go with you. Just fucking get on with it. Yeah. I think of all the Harry Potter franchise, the worst bloke in it is Harry Potter.
Oh, right.
Do you get asked all the time for like Netflix recommendations?
I have to confess, people don't ask me. I'm a bit of a forcing them on people. Unsolicited advice.
What was the last thing other than Cobra Kai to me of like you recommending to others?
Dave, probably. I was with Ross for a bit today, and he likes a bit of stuff like that. So I mentioned that to him. Yeah. because it was fresh. Other than that, no. So that's, yeah, that was today. So that's pretty recent.
Yeah, that's good. It was a crap question, to be fair. How is Ross? Is he all right? I haven't spoken to him in ages.
Yeah, yeah, he's good. I think he still listens to this.
Oh, geez.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. Hi, mate. How's it going? Let us know. If you look at my DVD collection, like so much stuff like Spaced and Black Books and kind of stuff I wouldn't touch, but like it's so good that that's on there. So recommending like Black Books and Space to people, really easy. And plus, like, I think about my favourite films ever, like Les Miserables, Shaun of the Dead, that's all on there. So it's, I've no idea why I've got Disney Plus, Amazon Prime.
Like, yeah.
Like Netflix pretty much does it all. But did you have like a Netflix originally when you had to send off DVDs and stuff?
No, my first memory of Netflix was my dad mentioned it when he was first in America and when I'd kind of speak to him on Skype and stuff. And I think he used to mention then that he used to kind of get, you know, DVDs delivered through the front door.
Yeah.
So I never did it. I only sort of went onto it once it was sort of online and streaming. So I knew that that's how it started, but never used it.
Yeah. Because when I worked for video networks, they had this kind of thing called Home Choice, which was like a set-top box with loads and loads of stuff on it, like Netflix. But it was really expensive and it never took off and the company went bust. But like basically was Netflix. And like, quite frustrating because my shares I've got in that company would be worth so much. And now they're worth fuck all. Yeah. So we're going to kind of recommend our favourite Netflix shows today. Or like, I don't know, neither of us chose a... Well, you chose a film... And a special. I chose a special something.
I came very close to, well, there was one thing that I initially went to, but then I had to kind of keep it real.
Yeah.
And the thing that I initially went to look for isn't on there anymore. So oh, I right. thought, nah, there's no point doing that. Because this stuff does kind of come and go, doesn't it?
Yeah. What was that?
It's called The Carter Effect. It's about Vince Carter, who played for the Toronto Raptors.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's on Disney Plus now, isn't it?
Oh, is it? Okay, yeah, that wouldn't surprise me. And I think it's on YouTube, to be honest. I think the whole thing's on YouTube. It's not that long. And then at one point as well, I was going to choose, because I watched them all within the last kind of 6 months once I saw they were on there, and I just got a kind of was the all the Jackass films, which I still enjoy.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that. But they're not either now. For a while, all of them were on there, and now just 3 and 3.5 are on there, and the rest have disappeared, so...
I find it tough watching Jackass. Like, I like all the big stunts they do and the kind of funny bits, but when they do like stuff that involves shit or something or piss, or they're like, and what I really like about Jackass is the bits in between when they're fucking about with each other, like messing about.
Yeah.
So Netflix, neither of us chose The Last Dance, did we? But I think we might have to do a special on that because it is the.
Yeah, I did. I said to you, but I think it feels like something that I would feel like I'd want to talk about for longer than,
A little bit. We were talking about it on Saturday about the best documentaries. You know, this is the kind of chats we have now, 39-year-olds. And I said, like, The Last Dance is possibly the best documentary, or Icarus I really like as well.
But yeah.
They're always going to be sport-related, I think.
I think I've watched other things that are good, but those are the ones that still draw me in, I think.
I'm primed to watch I, Sniper on Channel 4. Do you know that it's the story about the Washington Sniper?
Oh,
bloke and his son. When I worked in Camp America, this kid who I was coaching like soccer or two, he had a big scar down the front of his chest. And I asked him, oh, like, what, have you had a heart problem or something? Like, do we need to take it easy? I haven't seen anything on your form. And he was one of the people injured by the Washington Sniper, but survived. Yeah. Unbelievable. This kid was like 15, like mixed race, like kind of cornrows, kind of really, really nice kid. And you just like... It was like an inch and he'd be dead kind of thing.
Yeah.
You can imagine how much you'd appreciate life after that. I can't believe I'm so like privileged to meet him and talk to him a little bit about it. But obviously, you don't want to push. Like,
yeah.
What's the feeling like being shot by a sniper? But yeah, so I'm looking forward to watching that. But I think it's quite a few episodes of like 1 hour. I'm not up for that.
I struggle a lot of time.
Right, so shall we start a clip up? I'll go with one of mine, because that's the way we normally do it.
Okay, so fast forward to... Holy shit, I'm in the Interscope office. Holy shit, this is Jimmy Iovine. Holy shit, Dr. Dre just walked in. Holy shit, I just shit myself. I'm pissing myself now, thinking about it.
It all happened like that.
Yeah, I'm pissing right now.
So, Eminem comes in this bright yellow fucking sweatsuit, hoodie, pants, everything. It's bright fucking yellow, you know? And I'm like, wow.
I'm looking at Dre like, dude, I see you on TV all the time. You're one of my biggest influences ever in life.
I'm like, man, listen, I think this shit is fucking incredible and I would love to work with you. And I had a studio in my house at the time, and I went and put some samples together, did a couple of things in the drum machine, and I invited him over.
Dre, you do a lot of recording here?
Yeah, most of the recording is down here. Nothing more comfortable than home. I was like, man, listen, I put this sample together. Tell me if you like it.
Hey, one of my joints, man.
Yeah. And I hit the drum machine, and maybe 2 or 3 seconds went by, and he just went, hi, my name is, like, yo, stop. Shit's hot.
Episode 2 of The Defiant Ones, which is a story of Interscope Records, how it came to be. The story of like Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre, how they got together and signing of other rappers. And then when more rappers come in, they start signing other people. And like, it's the like really like in-depth look of how the rap scene works. And it's amazing. And I'd never heard of Jimmy Iovine because I'm obviously not that much of a fan to look behind the scenes of the kind of thing. But he was like, he worked with like Bruce Springsteen and he also signed Eminem, which is like mental.
Yeah.
And I really like it, but then it kind of ends a bit sourly for me because it goes, like we spoke about with Jaguar Skills, it just all goes into business, doesn't it? And like,
yeah,
all about beats, headphones and stuff. And I just think, oh, this is really sad. I'd rather have what are the NWA doing now rather than like what they're doing. But yeah, you've seen this, obviously.
Yeah, I think I was trying to remember when when you shared the clip earlier or mentioned it the other day. I think I... you know, like The Last Dance, I knew that was coming for like a year because I saw the trailer and I was like, I just should be checking back on Netflix every other week trying to find out when it was coming. But
right.
I think with The Defiant Ones, it was just one of those things that I turned Netflix on one day and it was just there.
Right, yeah. When it's on the main screen and plays you a little bit.
Yeah. And I looked at it and I was like, oh, that looks like that would be good. And then I read about it and it just happened to be on like a Friday. I think Emma was at her mum and dad's or something.
Touch.
And I was just like, I'm just literally just press play, just watched it all the way through till about like 2 o'clock in the morning, just sat there and just watched 1, 2, 3, 4. And then I watched it once through again, you know, sort of several weeks later. And then I've just dipped in and out of bits of it as well, you know, if I've got like 10 or 15 minutes where I'm gonna just sort of stick something on. So yeah, it's a massive, like, just something you can just go back to and just watch again and again.
Yeah, unbelievable, isn't it? And it's just so interesting to see how stuff's being made. I love that story about how he wrote almost one of the biggest rap songs of all time, like My Name Is, like within like 3 minutes of meeting each other. I think it's one of my favourite things to see, like that Beatles documentary on Disney Plus, that Get Back. When you watch like Paul McCartney working out the lyrics to like Get Back, and he's kind of singing along and it doesn't really sound right. And in your head, you know what the lyrics are obviously going to be, but you can see his brain working to try and get to that point. Like, when is he going to go, like, talk about JoJo was a like left Arizona for some California grass? Like, well, how does he get to that point? It's really interesting. And then when, like, Eminem, do you reckon they film everyone that goes into that studio and starts singing in front of Dr. Dre? Or they thought he was going to be that good that he was going to go.
You never know, do you? But I think that when they make the way that they make these sort of programs are quite clever sometimes, that they're telling you a story about something that happened a long time ago. But the footage that you're seeing while they're telling the story isn't necessarily the footage from the time of the story that they're talking about.
Yeah, sure.
But it sort of fits. Because I remember in that, what was it called? The Supersonic, the Oasis film.
Oh, right, yeah.
They did that in there. Like, they had like footage from like Noel and Liam at home somewhere. They dug out a video of Noel on the phone, and then they were playing like a phone conversation over it. But you could tell the phone conversation you were watching wasn't the one that you were hearing.
Yeah, yeah.
But
sure.
It looked kind of, it cuts together well. Really clever.
I really like that. So that was really good. Supersonic.
Yeah, I went to the cinema to see that. I think in recent years, most of my sort of cinema trips have been think, like Supersonic, the 89 Arsenal one.
Oh, right. I don't think I've ever seen a documentary at the cinema.
And then the Maradona, I went to the cinema. I was desperate to go and see Free Solo in the cinema just because of how amazing it would look.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But
just couldn't find the time.
Mm. And like, I imagine the sound, if like surround sound with that, that would have been amazing. But yeah.
Yeah.
We'll come on to that in a bit. Like,
yeah. It just sounds funny sometimes as a sort of laugh, you sort of hear yourself say something like when you think about what that Free Solo is about.
Yeah.
And then I didn't go to see it at the cinema because I couldn't find the time. And you just think, wow, he's a little bit more, he perseveres a little bit more than I do.
He's got a different mindset.
When he's got a challenge.
What was 89 like? I'm still yet to see it. I don't think anything.
Have you not seen
it? I don't think there's anything more I could be told about it, if that makes sense.
No, there's probably not much that you would hear that would be new to you, but just good footage and good kind of current interviews. You know, they get they get like the back four together, are sort of sitting there in the pub having a drink together while they're chatting about it. Stuff like that's good. Mm. There's no revelations in it. There's good footage of the pub when they came back to.
Oh right, yeah.
Yeah, come back and the fans and the players getting pissed up all night in the pub together. There's some good footage of that.
I seriously don't think there's a story about Arsenal's probably from 1988 to now that I don't know. You know, that's been said on the radio or by a player on like a pundit or something. Like I went through a load of like Roy Keane ones the other day. There's people telling different stories about Roy Keane.
Yeah.
And like as much as they're interesting and they're kind of, Roy Keane was at Aston Villa, and like he's telling Gabriel Bonglahore, like hit the target, and he keeps missing because he's aiming for the corners, and Roy Keane just can't handle it. You think, well, yeah, he's like a hardened winner. Like, of course, he's not going to handle you at Aston Villa. And he just said, like, he just couldn't understand how people could be bad at football. It's just so, because like if Ray Parlour ever comes on anything, I just turn it off now.
Like, yeah.
I think I've heard every story, and it's normally just about him drinking.
He's an odd one, isn't he? Because he works out and goes to the gym and keeps fit and that, but he does seem like he's got a drink problem.
Yeah,
he's always forever sort of seems to do a lot of time is he sort of tweets and Instagrams videos of himself in the pub, seemingly on his own.
Yeah,
like with a stranger who he's just kind of roped into doing a Jaeger bomb with him.
All kinds of sad, isn't it? And then
also
does like videos on Twitter of him making cocktails in his own house, which who knows what he's up to. But then he had that interview on Talk Sport with the guy who runs AFTV, and he was a right dick on that. Like, I can't stand AFTV, don't get me wrong, but the way Ray Parlour talked to the Robbie guy who runs it, like they were talking about like the starting of the Super League. But Ray Parlour keeps going, yeah, but you prefer it when Arsenal lose because you get more people watching your videos, don't you? And this Robbie bloke's going, what are you talking about? We're talking about the Super League. Yeah, but you prefer it when... And, like, I think Ray Parlour lost all my respect with that. I just thought it was so crap and, like... It was
when I saw that, I just thought it was... I thought that was him being fed, you know, him being told, like, this is Talk Sport, you need to be...
Darren Goff levels.
Yeah. But like you say, either way, you end up thinking, oh, come on. Like, either that's what you believe or you're just doing what TalkSport told you. Neither of those are particularly sort of impressive traits. But yeah, the stories, the Eboué tackling Arsene Wenger. The one you hear all the time, that I mean, I love a lot of the ex-players and I love Ian Wright, but when I hear them tell that story about a berm...
Yeah.
I just don't know why they find it so funny.
They used to call Arsene Wenger Jacques, not Jacques Cousteau, not
Inspector Clouseau.
Yeah, and like I like that story where he's got a piece of apple pie on a plate, Arsene Wenger. And then as he's walking, the apple pie slowly slides off the plate, and Arsene Wenger hasn't noticed. And that's why they called him like Inspector Clouseau. My brain was dying to say Jack Cousteau. So Jimmy Iovine. he tells a story about him and Suge Knight fighting it out over Death Row Records, and like you think, how does Jimmy Iovine survive that? When you, if you watch, even if you only watch straight out of Compton, you don't look more into Suge Knight. You know, he's like not a person to be messed with at all, really, is he?
No, like, but I can only imagine that Jimmy Iovine's just got that natural kind of, you know, Italian sort of bravado inside him, where he just doesn't, doesn't find people intimidating or scary. That was one of the closest I've ever come to sort of phoning in the radio to try and win a competition, because around about the time that I saw the Defiant Ones, Dermot O'Leary did his mystery voice thing that he does on the radio, and it was Jimmy Iovine, and I was like, that's Jimmy Iovine, and I don't think many people are going to know that, but I didn't bother. Keep listening to it every week until someone gets it right, and then I go,
see, told you so.
This is the part where everybody hung. Liberty
that I rejoice in, right high as the listening sky.
I'm not the singer. I know every word. I ain't the singer. Joe.
You got me on that one.
Joe, don't be like that.
Joe, can't you sing something that's not about pussy for once? Oh, I don't want to be a player. I'll fuck around. I don't know. All right.
That is Dave Chappelle and D.L. Huey celebrating 25 years of the Def Comedy Jam. So, Mark, watch this many times because I am yet to watch it.
Yeah, only not silly amounts. First time and then twice since, I think. Quite recently, okay. I was having a day at home when Emma and Dolly were going somewhere in the build-up to Christmas. We'd got a few bits of like Barbie stuff for Dolly from, you know, like a Facebook Marketplace thing.
Yeah.
And I'd said to Emma that needs a bit of a clean before we sort of give it to her. So I just was sat there on the living room floor, and I didn't want to sort of watch anything that I'd have to concentrate on because I keep missing bits. And I thought I'll watch something that I've seen before, and I stuck that on again, and just really liked it again. And there's obviously it was difficult because I kind of wanted to pick a clip of one of the lesser known people in it.
Yeah, sure.
Because I think we've spoken a few times about Chappelle, and even like D.L. Huey's that is that little bit more well known. But there's just so many good people in it that I'd never seen or heard of before.
Right.
Not your kind of your stalwarts, not your kings of comedy, like just the fringe people from like way back when Def Jam started. But there just wasn't as many clips knocking around. And then I just kind of that just really made me laugh when I heard that.
Yeah.
Because I think it's just so, I mean, it's because of the nature of what it is, it's quite staged and a lot of it's scripted because it's almost like not like a tribute award ceremony kind of thing. When he makes that comment to the singer.
Yeah.
Everyone's sort of standing up and clapping and doing their thing, and you can just tell that he's just kind of brought the house down with that.
Yeah, massively. It's great when Chappelle ad-libs, because there's another bit in there where he talks to like the producer and like talking back to the sound guys and stuff, and
yeah,
he tries to count them in, like, and then it all kind of goes wrong, and it's good because it is ad-libbed a lot. I think a lot of it, but then the craft of Chappelle can turn shit into gold, can't he?
Yeah, because I think I saw that flash up. I was watching all the Chappelle shows on Netflix, you know, going back a couple of years to when those, well, no, more than a couple of years now, isn't it, when that new run of specials kind of started landing a few years ago, three or four, obviously culminated in going to see him recently as well, because it just all sort of lined up well. And I think when I'd watched all of his ones, I started seeing the recommendations then, and Chris Rock's Tambourine was there around about the time. And then I think I watched one other, and then that popped up, and I was like, "Oh, that's a good idea," because you get a little bit of everyone.
Yeah.
But just a nice celebration, and you kind of see how much it means to them. And when you hear them sort of explaining that back when Def Comedy Jam started, they just weren't ever on anything else. Maybe there was one or two at the very, very top level.
Yeah.
But all other black comics, they were never invited on the talk shows, never. You know, never on the late night shows, never anywhere. So they kind of said, well, we'll make our own thing then.
Yeah. I watched like the best roast from Don Rickles. God, it's just so, it's like worse than Jim Davidson or Jethro. It's just, it's like a terrible. And you can say as much as you want, it's a different time. But it was so hard to watch. It's just kind of like, you know, when you watch, you see a comedian, you're kind of going, oh, that's not great. Like Frankie Boyle does it every now and then when he says something that kind of can relate to your life. And you're like, oh, I don't like that.
Yeah.
Tom Rickles was like, just continuous. But, you know, he's like 90. It's, I don't think it's right to be racist on any level. But he didn't discriminate against anyone. He discriminated everyone. Like even himself, pretty much. There's a great bit when he's at an award show or something. He kind of takes Mickey out, the president who's there and stuff. It's really good. And he talks to Julia Roberts and says, oh, you live next door to me, but you've never come over. And she laughs. And then she goes to say something. And he goes, Julia, you don't have any lines, just nod. Like, it just completely kills her in front of this whole room.
Don Rickles is in Casino, isn't he? Which is a really weird bit of casting.
Yeah, he's a pit boss in Casino. And because he, in one of the roast bits he does, he talks to Robert De Niro. Hell, he's the best he's the best actor of his generation, if you ask him. I think my favourite, because you know you get the, like we say, about the algorithms all the time. So Chappelle's stuff comes up. And his, when he talks about LeBron James transitioning to become a woman, and he goes, should, like, you know, if women were good enough to play in the NBA, then, you know, we should let them play in the NBA. But if LeBron James transitions and goes to the WNBA and scores 800 points a game, do you think that's fair? So you could do that, or you could shut the fuck up. Yeah, absolutely brilliant.
But like
I say, I've just done a nice little bit about not being discriminative in any way. Tell my favourite Chappelle joke, which is about transphobia.
I think the thing with him, though, is that when you listen to the bits that he does that are serious, it's pretty clear that he's you know, he cares and about what's right and what's wrong and trying to help people. So when he's almost given himself that ability to make jokes that other people would probably get pulled up. Yeah. Well, no, to be fair, not that he's been pulled up quite a lot, and he's had a lot of controversy around stuff that he's said.
But mainly through like people calling him transphobic, isn't it? Like, no one's called him racist. No one's called him homophobic. No one's, it's like that community is just, you know, seem to have a lot less tolerance for everything, which is fair enough because it cannot be easy.
No.
I think James Acaster does a bit about Ricky Gervais saying some things about Caitlyn Jenner. James Acaster kind of says, yeah, because you know who's had it easy for too long, don't you? The trans community. Someone's mobile phone rings.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah.
People are like, people kind of go, ooh. And Dave Chappelle's like, just go out and answer it. Like, and it could be anything. Like, you could imagine booing that guy, and then Mama's dead. Oh.
DL Hughley, DL Hughley is, isn't it? Hughley, yeah. I know it's not the only thing he's done, but just an interesting little sort of memory of him. He's the comedian in he was in The Fresh Prince.
Okay.
Do you ever remember that episode where Will's friend from Philly comes to see him, and his friend is a stand-up comic?
Yes, I do.
And then Will says, I can do it as well. I'm funny, I can be a stand-up comic. And yeah, like, exactly. D.L. Hughley's playing his stand-up comic friend in that.
Yeah.
And I think he does a bit on stage, and then Will does a bit on stage and gets a laugh and says, oh, I can do your job. And then, like, you know those kind of shows, there's always a moral thing, isn't there? And it's like, oh, you know, no, you can't stop, you know, don't disrespect my profession and all the rest of it. And you know, they're all friends at the end.
Yeah. I think someone pointed out to me, like, the best thing about The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air is every time Jazz gets kicked out of the house, there's the same weather.
It's awfully cold in outer space today. The Earth is just a tiny speck a million miles away. I'm floating through the darkness. There's nothing much to see. And a cosmonaut named Yuri is the only one with me. Now we're in zero gravity, just spinning round and round. The next thing you know, I'm right side up, and Yuri's upside down. My penis accidentally goes in his mouth. His penis accidentally goes in mine. Yes, it's just another accident on station 69. Ladies and gentlemen, Yuri!
Hello, people of Earth. I sent a message back to Earth to tell them we're all right. I checked the telescopes and looked for instruments to fix. But my favorite part of space is when we suck each other's dicks. Absolutely. We're spinning around in circles and it feels very nice when we kiss each other's penis tips, seems like paradise. We're traveling in light speed,
yes.
It's an intergalactic ride. Well, we used to have a monkey, remember? But I fucked it till it died.
Yes, we're in zero gravity,
just spinning round and round.
The next thing you know, right side up.
I am upside down.
He accidentally puts his penis in my mouth.
And he puts his penis in mine.
Yes, it's just another accident.
It's just another thing that on purpose I did.
Another afternoon on station 69. Go back.
So that is Adam Sandler and Rob Schneider singing Spaceship 69 from the Netflix program. It's called 100% Fresh, Adam Sandler, which is a mixture of, well, it's one show, isn't it? But kind of filmed at about 20 different locations, and they show different bits from different ones. And I think, well, probably it's true actually, because I looked it up earlier. It's the thing I've most watched on Netflix.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think musical comedy is like my favorite thing. Have you seen Bo Burnham's Inside yet?
No.
It's absolutely brilliant. It kind of changes. He kind of filmed it. Oh, you know, I played you that song, White Woman's Instagram.
Yeah.
It's the show of that, where he's kind of locked in his house for lockdown. And that's going to win all the stand-up awards this year, kind of. Because James Acaster's Cold Lasagna Hate Yourself tour was kind of tipped to win, and then Bo Burnham did this Inside, and then, like, no, you've got no chance. So, yeah, musical comedy I really love. And it's really childish kind of songs, aren't they?
Yeah.
And they last about probably 30-40 seconds, some of them, and then I really, really find that one funny, because when Rob Schneider first come in, I really like Rob Schneider, even though he's terrible. And it's just such a childish little song, and I love the fact that they understand that it's so childish and start laughing along at what the ridiculous situation they're actually in. But there's some really good songs in there. He does a tribute to Chris Farley, which I love, because I'm a big Chris Farley fan. And it was a really touching little tribute, wasn't it? He did it on Saturday Night Live, but he obviously had to censor it. So when he did it on stage and shows clips of, like, Chris Farley rollerblading and things, just such a sad story, isn't it, Chris Farley? But then he bought, like, Adam Sandler says he's the funniest person in the world. Yeah, so you've watched this document.
I've watched it once, start to finish, and then I've cherry-picked individual songs. Like you said, some of them are very short. There's so much in it, though, isn't there? That's what I say. It's so much material. Like you say, because some of them are only 30, 40 seconds. He finishes them, and then he's, like, into another one.
Yeah.
I don't know how many. Is there a playlist? Is there a list of how many songs there are actually in it?
I've never looked it up, but... yeah, there must be good 30, I'd say.
Well, one of my favourite ever still is the one from the Saturday Night Live DVD that you had, or still got, probably. the Hanukkah song.
Yeah.
Put on your yarmulke. Really, really like that. I listen to that quite a lot still, just on YouTube.
Yeah, it's massive, isn't it? Because that's kind of one of the things he's most famous for in America, is the Hanukkah song. Before, like, Happy Gilmore's and your Waterboys. Yeah, some really good lyrics in that. Like, O.J. Simpson is not a Jew. It's because he kind of interlaces with some stories and some jokes. But then Adam Sandler can make you laugh and by just pulling a face or wagging a finger, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, first time I watched it, I kind of thought, this is one of the greatest things I've ever seen. But then I think you have to be a certain type of person to like Adam Sandler's doing anything, you know?
Yeah, what's your view on it then? Because I think, generally speaking, Happy Gilmore is widely liked. I suppose, I think The Wedding Singer is, I would say. Waterboy is a little bit more niche, maybe.
Yeah. 50 First Dates is liked by majority of people.
Yeah. But I mean, the ones that get the real like coating off, the more like recent years, like the
Sandy Wexler, was it?
The Cobbler I've not seen a lot of them.
Cobbler's Click.
Does Click fall into that?
Well, I think Click's more like a child's movie, isn't it? So yeah, Click, I think it's more of like a PG kids movie, isn't it? Because a lot of like Happy Gilmore is swearing and stuff, and even though that's probably a 12 or something. But Uncut Gems is one of the best films I've seen in the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely did. Uncut Gems, you know, a lot of the time you hear people saying stuff about a thing, and you think people are jumping on the bandwagon.
Mm.
But I heard people describing that film and what it was like before I watched it, and when I watched it, I was like, "Fucking hell, yeah, they're right." It's so like,
yeah,
stop all talking at the same time, and
yeah, because I think Netflix just threw a lot of money at Adam Sandler to make content, and there's some of these things I've not even heard of, like The Ridiculous Six, like I've not heard of. I know it's a Western with Adam. QB Halloween, these are just on Netflix. The Week Of, never heard, and these, the ones I've seen, The Do-Over, terrible. That's My Boy.
No, not
awful.
No.
Jack and Jill actually is holds a record. Have you ever seen Jack and Jill?
No, is that when he plays brother and sister, is it?
Yeah, he won the Razzie Awards, you know, the anti-Oscars, for worst actor and worst actress for the same movie. Have you seen That's My Boy?
No.
It's Andy Samberg and Adam Sandler. And he plays like Andy Samberg has an affair with his teacher when he's like 12 or 13, and they have a child in Andy Samberg, and he's obviously been brought up all wrong, and like it's really bad, which is a real shame because I really like Andy Samberg and I really like Adam Sandler.
When you see El Capitan for the first time, I mean, it takes your breath away.
Early in the morning, there's this one panel of the wall that illuminates first. The Don Wall.
It has never been climbed until Tommy Caldwell came along. Nobody had actually considered trying it.
It's like stepping off the edge of the earth.
I guess the question here is, why are you doing this?
I was this very fragile little kid.
He didn't crawl till he was over two.
I think my dad felt the best way to prepare this kid for the world was to toughen him up a little bit. And so he took me on all the craziest climbing walls you could ever do, and he did it with a six-year-old.
By the time I was 14 or 15, there was climbs that I could do that my dad couldn't.
Tommy became one of the best young climbers.
And then he got invited to Kyrgyzstan to rock climb. And all of a sudden, we're hostages.
After being held captive for 6 days, four young Americans confront the ultimate choice, to kill or be killed.
He saved our lives.
But he became a different person.
Ever since Kyrgyzstan, I just have this fire in me. This has always been my safe place, my way to deal with life.
I was looking across at
the Don Wall. The last unclimbed big swath of stone, I decided, maybe that could be climbed.
I needed a partner.
Kevin, he was one of the best in the world, at only up about 30 feet.
But everybody else thought I was crazy. At this point, I have no idea what I'm getting into. It's about to consume 6 years of my life.
This is a pipe dream, man. Come on.
Nothing left to do but just take a couple deep breaths.
If Tommy and Kevin can actually do this, it will be...
Come on!
The most difficult climb ever done.
And it's gonna go on day after day.
Suddenly the whole world was watching. And one of them stuck. No! It was pretty clear that that was it.
I don't wanna hold you back.
Maybe this climb really was impossible. We are capable of so much more than we could ever imagine.
That is Dawn Wall. Mark, we spoke about this lightly before, haven't we? But we'll go more.
Yeah, I think we touched on it. I think did you watch it? Did you just mention it in your kind of round?
Giblin's
roundup for the week.
Yeah, I watched it and then I kind of watched a little bit of it back to again to remind me, because I always get mixed up with Free Solo. But this, I think, is far superior to Free Solo.
Yeah, it's more of an interesting like movie experience. Free Solo's sort of just a more outstanding kind of unusual. A lot of people all know of Dawn Wall because I think when Free Solo sort of captured the imagination the way it did when that film came out, it spawned a lot of things like Dawn Wall and other ones kind of landing and getting put on Netflix and things like that, which is where I first saw it. But I think what with the Dawn Wall, why I sort of love it so much is I remember one of, you know, like at that moment, where were you when?
Yeah.
And I remember being sat on the sofa at home in the old house we lived in and just kind of doing something else. And the news was on in the background. And I overheard someone saying, oh, you know, exciting sort of news in America. So-and-so, so-and-so, these two people I'd never heard of are like camped out halfway up El Cap. And I'd been there on my honeymoon.
Yeah.
So I just, I heard it and I think, well, no way, you can't climb that. It's a sheer cliff, like it's completely flat, and like the bloke said at the start of that clip, it just takes your breath away when you see it. And I remember just stood there staring at it. I think I could have stood there for like a day just looking at it because it just doesn't seem real.
Yeah.
When I remembered hearing that news report and I was watching it, thinking, oh my God, I can't believe it. And you know, doing the whole thing where they hang off the side in tents and sleep there. They were up there for like 2 weeks or whatever, 2 or 3 weeks. So when this film came out and I sort of realised that they'd sort of documented it, I was just like, oh, well up for it. And it was like they better than Free Solo as a kind of movie experience.
Yeah. And like, I'm not into climbing at all, but then I liked I thought it was a really, really good documentary. There are some things that annoy me. I hate the way they say Kyrgyzstan throughout the whole thing. Just Kyrgyzstan. Sorry, it's just so fucking rude that they're speaking English and not getting the name of the country right. And it kind of cuts between his childhood growing up and like kind of magazine clippings, and then it goes into like a cartoon of like his experiences, and then off on to show him climbing Dawn Wall with Kevin Jorgensen, Tommy Caldwell, Kevin Jorgensen.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's kind of a strange thing, like so, like how pitches work, you know. So pitch one is from the ground to the first thing, pitch two further up, and so on. And it's pitch 15. I can't remember the name of it, but they are stuck on that for a good 20, 30 minutes of the film.
I think Tommy Caldwell does it, and Kevin can't, and then he just, you know, there's that sort of dilemma: do I go on my own, or do I wait for my mate, and all the rest of it.
Right, I'm going to ask a question, and I want you to get this right first time. How many people have climbed the Dawn Wall in the history of the world?
I mean, I don't know. I thought they were the first two. I thought that was the point of it. I don't believe anyone's done it since.
One person has done it since. What was his name? I did write it down on my phone because I thought that's quite interesting that only three people have climbed it ever. Adam Ondra has climbed it, and two other people are attempting to climb it and not done well and are coming back for another attempt. Yeah, and one thing which confused me, when they sleep in those tents on the kind of side of the rock face, basically, that they wee in specific like pots and then label it urine and lower it down. Like, what's the point of that?
Or would you just be a launcher?
I think I wouldn't even put it in the park. Wouldn't you just lean off the edge a little bit?
I'm sure they must have. I always liken it to Forrest Gump, that film. I just think his life and like what led him to that point. It's not quite as sort of lavish as, but the accident and how he took that next step onto that kind of world stage of climbing is unbelievable. It's something out of a film that you would say that's bollocks. He turns up at a climbing event to watch. Yeah.
And the day before, 15 or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I think 15. The day before the event, they have like a little invitational, like, oh, you know, let anybody have a go. And whoever wins from the open invitational gets to compete with the best in the world. He wins the invitational, then goes the next day to compete against the best in the world and beats all of them as well. And I like heights, and I especially like sheer heights as well, like tall buildings and then cliffs like that. I always remember sort of, when we was in Portugal, when I was younger, just always catching my eye. If I saw like a big cliff, I'd just sort of sit there staring at it, thinking, oh, that's big.
Yeah, excellent. I'm quite the opposite. Oh, I'm shit scared of heights. I'd quite happily go up a ladder if someone's holding it. Do you know what I mean? But being at the top of a building, my brain tells me, like, I can almost see myself jumping, if that makes sense. Like Final Destination. Like when I was up top of the Rockefeller Center, it has like a deck of like, you can walk around, but then you can go higher and there's not such a deck. And I, in my head, was thinking, could I run and jump over that, over the deck kind of thing? And I think, could I do it? Could I do it? Could I do it? I better go downstairs. But yeah.
Apparently that's not uncommon, that feeling.
I think that's what they say vertigo is, when you can, when you get drawn to the edge kind of thing, which is...
Yeah, that urge, that weird feel, it feels like you're urging yourself to jump.
Yeah. Have you ever been to the Eden Project?
No.
In the Eden Project, there's like a kind of walkway that goes to the top of the, like one of the things, one of the domes, and it is very high. But I just showed like Zoe, I climbed, I said, I don't know if I can do this, I'm gonna have to go back down. And then when I looked at it, I think, oh, stop being so fucking pathetic. Just like your mum's just walked up there with your dad, like you just get on with it. And I walked up. And I showed Zoe my watch, and I was, I think, like my heart rate was like 170 or something like that. And I just thought that's not good either.
When we were on our honeymoon in Vegas, I did the sky jump thing off the stratosphere.
Oh, wow. Wowzers.
That was good. That was like, it's not like a fast thing.
Yeah.
You just jump off on a rope, and it just you drop for a couple of seconds quickly, and then it sort of catches you and lowers you slowly down. But I think I've said to people before, I've spoken about doing it, that the jump itself was quite tame because of how slow it was, and obviously having done like a proper bungee jump, which is a lot more sort of, you know, extreme. There's not a better view of Vegas than just sort of stepping out like as the doors open, and you pretty much walk the plank. That was the best bit, was just being on that plank waiting and just having a look around and just thinking, wow, like looking down and all the things that they tell you not to do, because I was comfortable doing it and I wasn't scared. They're like, oh, don't look down, don't do this. And I was like, honestly, I'm fine. I will look down because that's one of the things that I wanted to do. And then looking out and just that hot like desert wind hitting you, and that it was really real like exciting sensation. And then the jump itself, the first second was exciting, and then it's a very slow sort of
please subscribe to us at youtubereviewpodcast.blogspot.com or see us on Twitter at rocklerussell1.